radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Hello, this is Rich Gassaway, and this is the Leader's Toolbox on firehouse.com. I'm at the Firehouse Expo in Baltimore, and I have a great privilege of having Bob Dummel be my guest. He is a captain with the Rochester Fire Department, where he's worked for 24 years, and he also works for Tech Rescue Corporation in upstate New York, and they provide a variety of technical rescue training to fire departments literally around the world, and we'll put a link to their website at the end of the podcast. But today, we are talking about generational differences in the fire service. And I had a chance to be in the speaker ready room with Bob this morning as we were preparing for some other things that were happening today. And we happened upon the discussion of generational diversity in the fire service. And I was very intrigued by what he had to say and found out that this is a topic that he presents on regularly. So I invited him to be a guest on the podcast radio show. And I guess the first question that jumps right out at me, Bob, is what does this mean? What's generational diversity in the fire service, and why should we care?
Well, Rich, one thing I'd like to say is thank you for letting me be part of your activities today. And what we're looking at is something very unique. We're living in a time where we're dealing with four definitive generations all functioning simultaneously in the workforce at one time, something very new and unique. Our fourth generation is just evolving into the workforce, so it's not something that's been in place for a significant period of time. We're looking at various groups, our traditionalist group also referred to at times as the veterans or the silent group. These are our seniors. These are the elders in our community, people born between approximately 1922 and 1945, the people who got us where we're at today, and then followed closely by the baby boomers. The two of us sitting here today comfortably fall into that category.
Exactly.
We're the largest group right now, and because of our size and our age group, we're looking at people from 1946 to 1964. We're looking at many of the leaders in the fire service today coming out of that age group because of the numbers of years of service we've been able to obtain. So it's a very powerful and a very functioning group within it at this time. So it also carries a lot of the responsibility of the future of our fire service at the same time. And then we followed up with our third group, the Generation Xers, the 1965 to 1980 group, a very unique group. They were the baby busters, the latch key kids, a generation that had many unique things take place during their growth. Unfortunately, this may be one of the generations that is going to set the pattern of being the first one to not go beyond the level of their parents. Traditionally, the generations have been set up to each generation would succeed the one previous to it. And unfortunately, because of the times they were growing up in, this may not be the case for many of them, which may create some of the challenges of both today and the future. And then fourth, and definitely not last, is the millennials, the young Generation Ys, the gamers, the nesters, many of the different terms that have come up for these young members of our community, about 1981 to 2000. And these numbers are just ballpark. You can read many different printed materials, internet-based educational information sources on it. It fluctuates, but what we're looking at is not things written in stone or actualities of specifics, but general explanations of a gender as a whole. So now that all four of us are together, we got to start opening our eyes and finding out just what it means, how we're going to communicate with one another, things of that nature.
Well, what are some of the differences, other than the fact that we were raised in different time frames? What are some of the differences between these generations that could create some challenges for us as leaders?
As leaders, I think one of the biggest things we need to focus on is understanding one another. I think we have a tendency to stay within our comfort zones in most everything we do in life. And as we work in our day-to-day environments, be it in a career, the combination, or the strictly volunteer environment, it's pretty much the same across the board. We have an influx of many different people from many different backgrounds. In this case today, many different generations. We need to find out how to learn about one another so that we can get the most value out of one another and actually learn an appreciation. How my generation will impact theirs and vice versa. And these skills are going to be things we can take with us in the fire service and help guarantee the future so that, you know, the fire service will stay solid and move into the next generations as successful as it has been, if not more successful.
Bob, something has garnered your interest in this topic, as maybe you've traveled around or done some research. What are some examples of things that you notice these days that might be, you know, indicators of the newer generation, whether they're Gen Xers or Millennials, versus those traditionalists or the baby boomers? Are there some things that stand out that separate the generations?
Most definitely. Being a baby boomer, it's easy to speak from my comfort zone, but we also unfortunately carry the title as the workaholics. Our generation seemed to focus on work first, everything else second. The ability to aspire into positions, move up the chain of command, per se, in the fire service was things that really drove the baby boomer. When we look at our younger members coming up, the millennials, these are a very civic-minded generation. One thing that's very positive out of them, and they're being compared a lot to the traditionalists, which were the greatest generation, as Tom Brokaw said. These are the people who set the standard for the nation we live in today, and these young members of society have really taken a very ingrained look at civic pride and activity. And associated with that, they're a very unique generation where they look at education as an ongoing process. It'll be part of their life forever. So that's one area that they're really bringing something to the table that has got basically two sides to the sword. It's a very positive side because it shows a group of individuals who are going to constantly evolve and move forward into the future and always be willing to open and grasp change and be willing to experience change, where at the same time they could possess a bit of a threat to an older generation member, or even somebody in a generation one above, the Generation Xers. They may feel threatened because here is this very educationally upward mobile individuals pushing to learn into an environment maybe where they were comfortable with getting the ground level training and calling it done. So we need to find out and respect one another in that area and come up with ways to, you know, kind of meld our thinking patterns together. One area I've experienced directly is, you know, how do we take feedback in? You know, we have four generations here. As leaders and as managers, we need to understand each one of those four groups' comfort zones. If somebody's going to function in any aspect of society, we want them to be comfortable to get the most out of them. If you look at a traditionalist, our senior generation, you know, when they were dealing with things in their era, the best way to view feedback for them was no news is good news, because, you know, if it's bad, I don't want to hear it. So kind of the ostrich in the head in the sand for them to a degree. Us baby boomers, we like feedback, but once a year is good enough. But kill a whole bunch of trees, because a lot of documents and a whole stack of memos would be really nice to go with the feedback. That was our way of saying, well, we did our part, but we don't really want you here on a day-to-day basis. Moving right into our Generation Xers, this is a group of folks that, you know, they need feedback, and they're not afraid to say, you know, excuse me, but, you know, how am I doing? If you're being supervised as a Generation Xer by a traditionalist or a baby boomer, you may not be receiving the feedback in the volume or in the timeliness that, you know, meet your needs. And these are things we need to understand from one another. And, you know, fourth in the group, our millennials are so technologically savvy, they're basically looking at things. I should be able to get feedback instantly at the touch of a button anytime I need it and or desire it. So as you look at just four little chunks of a very massive puzzle of life, it's one of those things where we in the other groups need to remember that if we're focusing on our comfort zone, we're in essence neglecting three other major core groups within our working environment.
That's interesting. As you were talking about the different groups and some of their traits, I kind of had a flashback moment. My parents are obviously in the traditionalist category. My dad had one job his entire adult life. And then I was counting, I think that I've had four or five jobs in my adult life. What do we know about the Gen Xers and the millennials as it relates to their loyalty to one company or to one department? Because I know that there's this kind of maybe a pervasive feeling out there among us baby boomers that if you get a job in the fire department, you should feel grateful for having, the gift of that career. And some of these young folks maybe don't see it so much as a loyalty for life to one organization, but merely a stepping stone to greater things. Are you seeing anything in that area?
Most definitely. If you look across the different generations, our parents, the traditionalists, the parents of the baby boomers I'm speaking of, they looked at job change. It actually carried a stigma. They grew up in a generational society that you hired on to corporate America or an organization or whatever employment system you became part of. And their traditional values and thoughts were that that's where you would work your entire working career and retire out of that single entity. With the baby boomers, we've kind of put, job change puts us behind because we are such upwardly mobily desiring individuals by trait. We need to climb that ladder rapidly, and our measurement of success is via where we aspire within our employment organizations, specifically in the fire service for our topics today. Where have you gone in a rank structure? What are you providing to your agency is what comforts the baby boomer. So by leaving one organization and going to the other and having to start out basically on the first rung again was a very negative feeling to a baby boomer for the most part. When we look at our Generation Xers, they're seeing, because of the economic climate they've grown up in, job change is necessary. They have accepted, whether they like it or not, that they do need to move around from place to place, sometimes for the sheer reality of job eliminations, that they may have that desire from the earlier generations to stay with an agency or an organization, but the economic times have taken that away from them. We see this heavily in our industrial fire service folks. Municipalities have a little bit of a different operational capacity, but they're not immune to cutbacks as well. Unfortunately, our industrial brothers and sisters have been taking the biggest hit in this particular area. And with our millennials, because they are so educationally and advancement geared, job change to them is just a part of their daily routine. They don't have a problem with the fact that within their working career to accept the fact they may be into two, three, four, maybe more employment systems during their entire employment age group time. So it's definitely showing a very vast difference in thoughts. And at the same time, we've talked about them each individually, but we have to retain the thought is each of them focuses on it differently. You're going to be observed and thought about differently by the other groups, because remember, they're looking at things via their vision, not yours. So this goes right back into, we need to learn to communicate and educate one another on the process.
You're spot on. I couldn't agree with you more. I had another flashback as you were talking. I think back to my youth, you know, my time from, say, 15 to 20 years old, and think about, you know, what were the things that I was doing in my formidable years of preparation toward becoming an adult and employed in the workforce. And I think of having done things like my brother and I would build go-karts, you know, take lawnmower engines and try to put, you know, wheels on a skid and turn it into something that we could drive up and down the streets of our neighborhood. Or we had many bikes, many motorcycles that we would, you know, work on and tear the motors apart and put them back together. Or we would build what we were younger called forts, and as we were got older called them clubhouses. And, you know, and we were out with hammers and nails and saws, and, you know, so the things that we were tinkering with were, you know, very much tools of traditional trade, whether it was motors or construction and building. And I see my kids now that, you know, they're more into you know, Facebook and the internet and you know, Twittering and text messaging, and it's almost like the things that entertain them are a completely different set of technology. What's that mean for us in the fire service, you know, with those now developing different skill sets?
Oh, I think it kind of directly relates to how we engage one another, what we're going to do. Let's take training as a subtopic of this within the fire service. Had one of our deputy chiefs within New York State where I live that was giving us a informational piece at one of our training seminars, and he hit on a very valid point. Actually, was the impetus of an article I did for firehouse.com revolving around old school technology. We in the baby boom generation grew up where spring comes around, it's time to mow the lawn, and the lawnmower doesn't work. So what would we do? We'd get the adult figure in our lives and we'd put it on the workbench and we'd wrench away at it. And as long as it ran, blue smoke still counted. But if it could spin the blade and mow the lawn, we made it through another summer. And we could repeat this process for a number of years. Many different reasons revolved around why. But as we evolve through to the current status of societies we live in today, we've become a much more terminal or throwaway society. That same lawnmower today may end up on the curb for the collection day, and the family in the family vehicle heading to the big box store to pick up a brand new one. And back they come by midday and fire up the new one, and off to the races they go mowing the lawn. So relating this to training, kind of bringing it full circle, his point was that when we're doing technical rescue training, we can't omit chapters in a training curriculum such as hand tools. A traditionalist, a baby boomer, we may take it for granted. You know, there's always the old joke on your wife about, you know, give me the whatchamacallit and is the widget here and I need this, you know. And it was always a source of humor and entertainment at each other's expense. But we're dealing with a generation, a younger generation that's very talented, very skilled, and very willing to learn, but we can't make assumptions that they arrived at the table pre-knowledgeable of many of these skills and specialty tools, what we consider day-to-day first exposure tools to them. So we need to, you know, reevaluate and evolve our process. And this individual had a very good insight, and it was quite a few years prior to me being exposed to the multi-generational aspect of things, but I could see the tie-in immediately as I sat through my first professional development session related to this. As the individual spoke, he instilled an interest in this area where I felt it was worthy of taking the time reading more about it. And at first I said, boy, isn't this wonderful? If I could just convince my department to give our senior staff this level of training. And as I sat there, I thought, you know, how narrow-minded was that? Because if they were to buy into it and we gave it to the senior staff, I still would only have reached out to a small fragment of our total membership. So this is the type of thing. Is hopefully it'll evolve into a situation where we can offer it at events such as the Firehouse Expo. it affects everybody. Our youngest recruit coming through the door and our most senior member of the department all will benefit knowing more about how the other groups are wired and how they function, and maybe really help one another to work as a collective organization and not have as many silos or pods of thought in independently functioning.
Interesting. The more you talk, the more my mind just races through the differences between my parents and my life and my kids' life, and who knows what's the next generation and on the horizon. But I think back, well, when I was a kid and I needed to learn something, it usually entailed my mom driving me to the library and sitting down with an Encyclopedia Britannica at the library for a couple of hours and reading and taking notes and formulating a paper or learning something that way. And then eventually they ended up buying encyclopedias at home because we had four kids, and I think they thought it'd be easier to do that than to cart us to the library all the time.
Now, just not to cut you off, but those encyclopedias, what's the value on eBay for an encyclopedia set today?
I would think it'd be pennies, unless it was some antique value to it. I wouldn't imagine that there'd be much. I would suspect that companies like Encyclopedia Britannica have now gone online and offer their wares in the modern age. But what the point is I suspect that there's a different way. There's definitely a shift in the paradigm of learning today versus when we were younger. And I think the generation today learns differently than the way we learned. But what does that mean for how accelerated their learning can become when they can literally write from their cell phone or their iPod or their iPhone get the answer to a question? I have to laugh because I was teaching a class once and I had said something to the group, and somebody challenged me and said, I don't know if that's accurate. And I said, well, look it up on the internet when class is over. Well, I didn't have to. Somebody sitting like two rows across from them, you know, not instantly, but within a matter of 30 seconds to a minute said, nope, here's the answer, here's the website, you know, and we're right there in the classroom. And it was just such, you know, instant access to information. What does that mean for this younger generation, and what challenges does it present for us who maybe aren't as tech savvy as these young folks are today?
It's definitely going to be a challenge, but it's not an insurmountable challenge. What we should look at it from the traditionalists and the baby boomers down to the younger members of society now is use them as a template for, you know, our continued growth. One of the misnomers that out there is that our traditionalists are technically incompetent. They may be limited in exposure, but some of our traditionalists and senior members of our departments and society as a whole have embraced and taken on the technologies that have evolved in a breakneck pace. I mean, you look at your cell phone or any of the electronic tools you carry today, literally within days, it will be superseded by the next latest and greatest tool that's out there. You look at, as you just gave the example, a student in a classroom with a smartphone or a internet-connected laptop sitting in front of them can, within seconds, give almost instantaneous responses and answers to that. So as we move forward, if we take the time to educate one another and take the time to listen to one another, I think it's going to be a very positive part of our evolution into the future. And with this, we're basically relating today's topic to the fire service as a whole. We're looking at, you know, what can we do to retain the memberships of our fire departments? And we need to, break that down even further. bringing in new members, much is being done. There's grants out there for membership drives and different programs that are excellent, well done to bring members into your department. But what we've got to make sure is once we have them, we've got to retain them. You know, we in the training environment can put on, you know, vast volumes of firefighter one or entry level firefighter certification training, depending on, you know, different parts of the nation, how it may be referred to. But if we have X amount of members coming out of this training, but a disproportionate number leaving the back door and exiting the fire service fields, we're never going to, you know, find a positive checks and balance. So, you know, as we move forward, we need to, you know, consider everybody as part of the process. You know, the knowledge and talents that are lost due to retirement or an individual leaving an organization prematurely are devastating. When we look at what the cost of training of an individual is and the hours dedicated both by that individual and the organization to get them even to the most basic firefighting level and the various skills that are asked of us today, it's a big financial burden, but to have to keep repeating that process over and over due to the lack of retention, we're not giving our consumer, which is the publics we serve, the best bang for the dollar. So we're missing a big piece of the puzzle there. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody can look back in life at various situations where, you know, as a young member coming on in the fire service, both as a military member in the mid-70s and then into the career field in the mid-80s, the older generation lived by knowledge was power. And, you know, many of the older members listening here can maybe think about one of the times as a young member of your department being told by the senior member, you don't need to be looking at that pump panel, or if you open the front door of the cab just to take a glimpse because you were curious and excited, to be told there's nothing in there for you to need to know, because that sharing mindset really wasn't part of the world we lived in a few short decades ago, where today we need to take these new members in and from day one make them part of the process. Open up your minds, open up their minds, you know, let them know from day one that they are an important part of the process. You know, as we move through things, open our minds, open our thoughts, let them have an input. Some of the suggestions they bring to the table could be the solutions to the problems that have existed for a continuous number of years.
Again, my mind just continues the race based on the things that you say. This is the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to finish our conversation up with Bob Dumo, captain of the Rochester, New York Fire Department, talking on a fascinating topic, generational diversity in the fire service.
Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. Again, we're coming to you live from the Firehouse Expo in Baltimore with Bob DeMole, the captain of Rochester Fire Department. Bob, you got 24 years on the job, and Rochester's a big department. You probably see a variety of generations throughout your 24 years, and currently with new people coming on as a supervisor. What are some of the methods or suggestions that you would put out there for our listeners about how to manage these four different and uniquely different generations?
Well, let's take, for example, how we communicate with one another in general. If we look at our traditionalists, our more senior members, this is a group of folks who really thrive on formal communications, the written memo. You know, they want something delivered to them that gives it some substance. Our generation, the baby boomers, we're big on face-to-face. We like to get together. I think we are the generation who evolved the meeting to another life form. Some days I open my day planner, and it's a scary sight when you look at how many lines are blocked off for the proverbial meeting. But that was our take on it. That's how we work at our best, in our minds at least. And our Generation Xers are very similar, where they want something direct and immediate. They want, you know, the communications to be coming in a very fast pace. It can be through a memo, it can be interpersonal, but they need it in a hurry. You know, waiting 2 or 3 days for a response to a Generation Xer is a very uncomfortable environment for have them working in. And our millennials, I have 2 children, 22 and 24 years of age, great kids, live on different parts of the world. But boy, they're the email generation and the voicemail generation. You know, they instant message back and forth. The biggest thing I've learned with them is I can call, I won't get an answer. I know I'll get their voicemail, I'll leave a message, but if I send them a text or an instant message through one of our various communications forms, boy, about 20 seconds later, there's a ping and there they are. It's just how they function. And as a supervisor in the fire service and as a member in the fire service, just that little bit of knowledge has really helped me understand how to get the most value out of my time spent. I have the fortunate pleasure to work with a young individual as a lieutenant in our unit, a very educationally motivated individual. I don't need to do a lot of sit-downs with him. He's from that generation where we go over task, we send a note back and forth, he works on it, and he's always successful. He brings the final product to the table in a very timely manner, if not to a degree beyond what I even expected. But for me to sit him down and do extensive one-on-one or group meetings would be basically counterproductive to his skill set. So by learning that myself, I think I've helped to evolve just our small working environment into a much more successful one, because it's allowing this individual to work at his full capacity without trying to create something in him which he doesn't possess, and that is to be a baby boomer. As a good supervisor, no matter what one of these 4 groups you come from, your responsibility isn't to turn the individual into a clone of you, but it's to utilize the talents and skills and to groom the talents and skills of these individuals to be the best asset for the agency they represent. So, and we all have to remember, too, as we work in the workforce for more years, you know, we don't always work for somebody in an age group beyond us. It's very realistic that you will be being supervised during your employment years by an individual younger, maybe very young, as time goes by. So it's key that we take the time to learn about one another, experience each other, and, you know, communicate, talk to one another, and pick each other's brains. It'll never be perfect, but the more we can do, the better off we'll be at the end of the day.
Yeah, I again agree with you. As you were speaking, my mind was just racing through my life's experiences. My 17-year-old, he doesn't like to call somebody and leave them a voice message. I'll say call your friend and ask them, you know, this or that. And one, it's like pulling teeth getting them to actually pick up the phone and call. Or better yet, you know, call your friend's parent and ask them a question. Because he'll just text his friend. But he doesn't want to pick up the phone. And if he does, and their answering machine kicks in, he hangs up. And I said, did you leave a message? No, I'll just try calling later. And I said, well, what if they come home like 5 minutes from now? Well, I'll just try calling them later. He doesn't even like to talk on the telephone and leave a message. Everything is, you know, emails and text messages. And it's I worry some that this art of actual verbal communication is being lost. I was at dinner last night, another example, and you know, we're at a dinner of 12 people, and somebody texts somebody else at the table to pass the bread, and you know, instead of just saying, hey, can you send the bread up this way, they send a text message that says pass the bread, And, you know, the other person gets the text message, looks at it, passes the bread, doesn't think anything about it, you know. And you know, it's we're definitely evolving in how we communicate. And for us baby boomers who have not been raised on this technology, it can be challenging as we try to carry on conversations with people who have evolved into a digital age of communication. And I don't see it going backwards. I see it as only going forward and only continuing to become more and more evolved. You know, we're here at Firehouse Expo, and there's groups of people who are Twittering their experiences being followed by firehouse.com. You go online, and there's people that are going around the expo floor and observing different things and sending these messages of, you know, what they're seeing and observing and the classes they're attending and the best quotes from the classes and stuff. And, you know, 5 years ago, that was just you know, unheard of. You know, today, or 5 years ago, you sit in a classroom with a notepad and take messages. Today, you sit in a classroom, and I've seen it today in various classes I've been in. Somebody says something profound from the front of the room, and you see people, you know, texting and Twittering what was just said, you know, off to somebody else, and, you know, sharing those lessons instantly is just it's a fascinating development in human communication, and certainly one that is going to continue to create challenges cross-generationally if there isn't if there is resistance among some to not embrace this new technology. And you've spoken so eloquently to some of those challenges. I'm going to give you a chance to sum it up. And anything you want to say in closing for the benefit of our listeners about this issue, I'm going to say opportunity, about generational diversity in the fire service.
First, Rich, just thank you very much for, you know, having me as part of your cast today. And, you know, you kind of hit it quite well when you use the Firehouse Expo that we're attending currently as an example. You see many generations walking around here. This would be the ultimate test case to validate every one of the points within this type of a presentation, because our audience is live, functioning, and walking through the halls of the building we are in as we speak. Definitely want to reach out to firehouse.com, Cygnus, and Firehouse Magazine, because their efforts collectively putting these activities together does nothing but benefit the fire service as a whole. It gives people an opportunity, unfortunately, some only on an annual basis, some on a once-in-a-lifetime basis, to come together. But the positive is they had that opportunity, and it gives them a chance to grow. And in the long run, our fire service as a whole does nothing but move forward in a very positive way. And thank you again for allowing me to be part of today's activities.
Okay. Thank you for being my guest, Bob. We're going to put a link to Tech Rescue Corporation's website at the end of the podcast so people can learn more about your company and the good things that they're doing. And we'll look forward to hearing some feedback from the listeners about the Leader's Toolbox. And you can send those inquiries, questions that you have, or feedback to podcasts@firehouse.com, podcasts@firehouse.com. Again, coming live from the Firehouse Expo in Baltimore, Maryland.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.